Allow me to echo the words of Rob Brown in our personnel committee in thanking Susie for her 10 years of ministerial service with us. We have a wondrous ministerial staff, and they are so gifted in so many ways, and oftentimes you don't always see everything that ministers do, and all the different hospital visits they make, all the funerals they officiate, weddings, and other sorts of things that happen. Susie does all of these things and more, and we are so grateful to have her on our staff for the counsel she provides to our parents and our children, but the counsel she provides to all of us. So Susie, thank you, and we look forward to celebrating her all this month. I hope you'll write her a card. I hope you will send her a note. I hope you will simply give her a word of prayer and a word of encouragement, because particularly at seasons such as these, when you celebrate a milestone, it's the perfect and most appropriate time for those sorts of things. So please do so. And Susie, we celebrate with you and your family and during this month particularly. So we're moving on with our Catching the Wind, Charting the Course series. This series is the result of our vision discernment process. We've been involved in vision discernment as a church since the end of January. And what we've done during this process is we've talked about what God is asking us to do for the next 5 years. We know that we're a 3E church. We're a church that embraces God, equips Christ followers, and engages our world with His love. But what we've been asking for the last few months is, how is God asking us to do that now? What specifically does God want us to be about in our world and in our community? So we have had congregational conversations together. Our vision discernment team has spent hours thinking and talking and listening and praying together as we try to process all that you have shared and all that God has spoken to us as well. And in January, we shared with you some of our thoughts that you were very encouraging about. And those thoughts are going to make up the basis of the report that this group is going to give back to the church as a whole. And that report is going to be something that we are going to vote to affirm together. There's some recommendations as a part of that report that we're going to get to vote to affirm together. And we're going to share that report with the congregation. It's going to be available for you to read on October the 1st. We're going to have copies of it here. It'll go out online that day as well. But we're going to have copies of that document. It's a very thorough document, so you'll enjoy reading it during the sermon or some other time. But it's something that all of us, not just the Vision Discernment team, all of us have put our heart and soul into this as we've listened for what God has for us in the days ahead. So what we're doing for these sermon times together is we're talking about the undergirding pieces of this Vision Discernment report. The undergirding pieces, the six areas of focus, the six initiatives, if you will. Last week we started by talking about compassionate mission partnerships. And today we're going to continue that conversation by talking about extend good news invitations. Extend good news invitations. That's one of the six areas that we're talking about. And extend good news invitations, we have a sentence that talks about this. It's up on the screen for you to read. I'm going to read it for you as well. It says, "We intentionally build and nurture friendships with people who are not followers of Jesus, and through listening, compassion, and prayer, invite them into relationship with Jesus." Now, we're going to spend this sermon breaking that down some, but just to give you a picture of this, extending good news invitations is about inviting people to Jesus. And our biblical model for inviting people to Jesus are two relatively unknown disciples of Jesus. They are Andrew and Philip. And we read their story in John chapter 1. If you want to look on with us, it's on the screen behind us as well. But starting with verse 40 of John chapter 1, it says, "Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who heard what John the Baptist had to say and who had followed Jesus. The first thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and tell him, 'We have found the Messiah, that is the Christ.' And he brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, 'You are Simon, son of John. You will be called Cephas,' which when translated is Peter. The next day, Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, 'Follow me.' Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida. Philip found Nathanael and told him, 'We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law, and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. Nazareth? Can anything good come from there? Nathanael asked. Come and see, said Philip. Extend Good News Invitations means that we, as the people of Jesus, everywhere we are always looking to invite other people to come know how much Jesus loves them. We are an invitational people. We are a people who is always looking for the opportunity to say, Jesus has made the difference in my life. Would you like to come and see who he is too? Would you like to come and get to know him? We are a come and see kind of people. The word that is technical for this is called evangelism. Evangelism is a word that means to share good news about Jesus with other people and to invite them to respond to this good news of Jesus. Now, evangelism is a word that has some very bad connotations nowadays. Now, I know back in the day it was a word that was seen as something very helpful and a useful part of what the church does. But the word nowadays, when people think about an evangelist, if you grew up in my generation, you think about someone who had a great big fall like Humpty Dumpty. Anybody remember Jim Baker or Jimmy Swagger? My generation, that's who they think of when they think of evangelist. Or maybe they think of the guy, have you ever been to a rock concert? Go ahead, raise your hands, you can do it. Anybody? Some of y'all aren't raising them that high. You ever been to a rock concert or a football game? You ever notice that those places, sometimes there's a preacher, quote unquote, standing out on the side of the road. He's got big signs telling us everybody that God hates. And then he's screaming at people. And it usually is a he in this case, okay? He's screaming at people. And he's screaming at people about all the bad things they've done. And if they go into this concert, they're going to be subject to temptation, to fornication, and all this other kind of horrible stuff that they're thinking about. And they're getting screamed at. And they're being told, if you don't turn away from this kind of living, you're going to burn. That's what people think of when they hear the word evangelist or evangelism. Or maybe they think about the people that come and knock at your door. They come and knock at your door, and in 30 seconds or less, they want to either get you to come to their church or they want to get you to be a follower of Jesus before you slam the door in their face. Now, I want to ask you a question. A deeply personal, meaningful question. How many of you, when someone knocks on your door and you weren't expecting anybody to come by, immediately leap off your couch and say, oh my goodness, this is the best opportunity of the day. Somebody unexpected is knocking on my door. How many of you do that? That's very different. Okay, one or two of you, that's good. That's very different than the way the world was 40 years ago, 50 years ago. Used to be when people knocked on your door, everybody was like, cool, this is great. That's why you had door-to-door salesmen, because people liked to open the door. Guess what? They don't like to open the door anymore. Every now and then somebody does. But as a general rule, when somebody knocks on your door and you don't know them, people don't open the door. It's simply a way that the culture has changed. Or if they open the door, maybe they're hiding a golf club behind them in case they need to use it. Or maybe they're barely opening the door so they can see through the crack. It's a different world. So when people think that to be an evangelist, to go and share the good news of Jesus, that they have to go and knock on doors and do something that 8 out of 10 Americans hate, make them open the door for somebody they don't know, they don't want to do it. As a matter of fact, we learned in our Just Walk Across the Room series, which we did just under a year ago, we learned that only 23% of Christians strongly agree with the following statement. Christians have a responsibility to evangelize others. Only 23% of Christians in this survey responded that they agreed with the statement that Christians have a responsibility to evangelize others. One of the big pieces of this is evangelize has very bad connotations. It has the connotation that if we're going to evangelize people, we have to go and force them and coerce them, manipulate them, or do something that is forceful and almost combative in order to try and get people to follow Jesus. And when people say, if that's what we're supposed to do, I don't want anything to do with that. Even folks who are very solid, mature Christ followers say, I don't want anything to do with that. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I don't want anything to do with that. I'm not going to go and ever try and manipulate, force, or push people into following Jesus. But I will give my life trying to invite them. I will give my life to try and be an Andrew or a Philip and say, Jesus has changed me. Him coming into my life and ordering my life and leading my life has changed me. Would you like to know more about him? That, inviting people, loving people, listening to people, being compassionate with people, that's something that I can get behind. And that's actually what Jesus did. So I want us to think about a couple of core things about this statement. The first portion of the statement, we intentionally build and nurture friendships with people who are not followers of Jesus. We intentionally build and nurture friendships with people who are not followers of Jesus. I want y'all, we're going to just take, don't be scared, we're going to take, I didn't forget anything, we're going to just take 30 or 40 seconds. I want you to let that sentence sink in. Sinking in yet? Intentionally build friendships with people who are not followers of Jesus. I'm asking you to let this sink in because what research tells us is that if you've been a follower of Jesus or a member of a church for over 20 years, you know very few people who are not followers of Jesus. As a matter of fact, in the church I served when I did my Doctor of Ministry dissertation, one of the things I had to do with that is to give a survey and ask people how many friends they had who were not Christians. Do you know that everybody who filled that survey out who had been a Christian for longer than 20 years, none of them had any non-Christian friends. None of them. If they'd been a church member for over 20 years, none of them had a non-Christian friend. How in the world are we going to invite folks who are not followers of Jesus to know Jesus if we don't know anybody who's not a follower of Jesus? And folks, I'm not saying like know somebody as in you wave to the Muslim who lives in your neighborhood. That's not a friend. That's somebody you wave to. I'm not saying that having a friend who is a non-Christian means that you exchange Christmas cards with people from the other department across the hallway and where you work. That's not a non-Christian friend. I'm not telling you that you have a non-Christian friend if you happen to have to work on a business project with someone who happens to be not a Christian. That's not necessarily a non-Christian friend. I mean someone that you will eat meals with, that you will have conversations with, that if you like football, you will go to a football game with. I'm talking about someone that when they are hurting in their life, they will call you and you will listen to them. And when you are hurting in your life, you will call them and listen to them and have them listen to you. That's a friend, right? We have to, if we're going to do this calling from Jesus, if we're going to invite people who don't know him toward him, we've got to know some. And here's the problem. If we're followers of Jesus, guess where we spend most of our time? In the church building. Guess where non-Christians don't come? The church building. Now, they used to come here. But in our culture, this is one of the last places a non-Christian wants to come. And you know one of the last persons that a non-Christian wants to talk to? You know who that is? Me. Because I'm scary. And I'm dangerous. Because people have been hurt by lots of pastors. People have been hurt by lots of church leaders. As a matter of fact, most of the folks that are not followers of Jesus now, or most of the folks that don't go to church now, most of them used to go to church. A whole lot of them used to go. They got heard at church by some church leader or some pastor or some layperson, and they said, nuh-uh, never again. Said, I can follow Jesus with me and just a couple of friends. I don't need to deal with that institutional mess. All that politics and all that stuff, I don't need to deal with all that. That stuff hurts, and it's not a whole lot about Jesus. So they don't come here. Even the ones that follow Jesus don't always come here. So here's the point. If we're going to invite people to Jesus who are not going to church and who do not follow him, guess what? We can't spend all our time here. And we can't spend all our time with just church people. We've got to be willing to build friendships with people who don't look like, speak like, act like, dress like, believe like, vote like us. And not just put up with them, we've got to love them. Not just say we love them because that's the appropriate Christian thing to say, actually have our hearts feel kindly toward them and be willing to give up something of our life so that we can love them in their life. Because there's no way we're going to follow this command of Jesus, this command to invite people to come and see and to learn what he is about and what he is like, if we are not willing to love people who are not his followers. If we are not willing to befriend people who are his followers. Because guess what? You know what I will never give permission for someone who is not my friend to do? I will never give permission for someone who is not my friend to intimately tell me how to live my life. Or to intimately share with me how they're living their life and how it might impact my life. So why would we think we could do this for non-Christian folks who are not our friends? You have to earn trust. Now sometimes folks say, Randy, or sometimes they'll say, you know what? I don't want to be with people who do that stuff. And that stuff is equated to any sin that we don't do that's certainly worse than the sins we do. Right? Because you know whose sins are the worst sins? Anybody but mine. Right? You know how that works? You ever notice how the sins that you're most likely to commit are the ones that you tend to give a little more excuse for? The sins the other people commit, yeah, they're the bad ones. Sometimes Christians say, I don't want to be around that kind of stuff, whatever that kind of stuff might be. Most people who are lifelong followers of Jesus have very few friendships with people who aren't Christ followers. Most of us are content to know our church friends, know a few other friends who maybe go to, maybe go to one of those other weird places like Methodist. Just kidding. I went to a Methodist seminary. It's okay. Might have some friends, from one of those other denominations things, but non-Christian friends, we don't have those. We want to be around the good religious folk. We're comfortable there. What can be wrong with going to church activities all the time and being around the good religious folks all the time? What's wrong with that? The only problem I can find with that is it's not what Jesus did. It's not what Jesus did. Matter of fact, if you read in Luke 7, you hear Jesus talking. He just discovered that John the Baptist had been executed. And he's talking to some leaders that are not his friends. Leaders that have hated John the Baptist and now hate him. And he says, John the Baptist came neither eating bread nor drinking wine, and you say he has a demon. The Son of Man, by the way, who's the Son of Man? Anybody know? Son of Man is Jesus, so Jesus is talking about himself here. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and you say, here is a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. For wisdom is proved right by all her children. Jesus says, look, it doesn't matter what we do. There's a phrase in the English language that I'll modify that expresses what Jesus is saying in these verses. It says, look, Pharisees, look, doesn't matter what we do. We're darned if we do and darned if we don't. You've heard that phrase? Jesus is saying, look, if we follow all your laws better than you do, you still say, in John the Baptist's case, that we're not following them correctly. If we don't follow the laws, if I am around people that you find as less than stellar, or people that you have decided are sinners, and I spend my time around them, you accuse me of being sinful, even though Jesus had no sin. Jesus spent his time around people that the Pharisees and the religious leaders of his day would not touch. He spent his time around people that they would not eat with. He spent his time around people that they had given up on a long time ago, whereas they stayed only in their little cluster of religious people who did all the right things. Jesus said, I'm going to spend my time with people who are far from God, because those are the ones that need to be invited back. And lest you forget, dear Pharisees, God loves them just as much as he loves you. Jesus just gets crazy with this stuff. Matthew 5, we read in verse 27, that after this point, Jesus went out and he saw a tax collector by the name of Levi sitting in a tax booth. Follow me, Jesus said. And Levi got up, left everything, and followed him. Good gracious. Not only is Jesus going to sit down and befriend these people, he actually took a tax collector and just made him a part of his leadership team. If this had been a Baptist church, we'd have said he just made him a deacon. Or he just made him a Sunday school teacher. Or he just made him a part of the leadership council. And Zacchaeus, sorry, he was a tax collector too. Levi was a tax collector, which meant, well, basically everybody hated him. He was a Roman collaborator, Jewish, but he collaborated with the Romans, so all the folks who hated Rome, the zealots and to some extent the Pharisees, they hated him. He took a lot of money for himself and didn't necessarily share with others because it was a way for him to mistreat people, so all the poor hated him. He was unclean because he didn't follow the religious laws and because of his collaboration. So even the folks in power, the chief priests and folks who, Sadducees, who also collaborated with the Romans, they didn't like him because he couldn't come into the temple. He couldn't come into the synagogue. He was ostracized. Can you imagine somebody that both the Democrats and the Republicans can't stand? That's him. That's Levi. And Jesus takes him and makes him one of his 12 disciples, his founding core group for this whole strategy of telling how much God loves people. This is a great plan. Not only that, not only does Jesus put this guy in leadership, whereas he doesn't put the Pharisees in leadership, he doesn't put the religious ones who spent all their times in the wall of the synagogue in leadership, he puts this tax collector, but it gets worse. Then Levi held a great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others were eating them. Good gracious, it's not just one of them now, they're everywhere. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law who belonged to their sect complained to his disciples, why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners? Jesus answered them, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I've come not to call the righteous, but the sinners to repentance. Can you hear the tongue-in-cheek situation that Jesus has going on here? There is nobody righteous. We may do some right things occasionally, but at the end of the day, compared to God's holiness and perfection, compared to Jesus, none of us are righteous, including the very Pharisees that thought they were. Jesus is telling them, you think you're righteous, but you're in the exact same boat as these folks. These folks that you won't even pay attention to. Jesus called a sinner, a tax collector, to be on his leadership team. And then he went to a party at his house. And as I said at the 8:30 service, I just want you to throw all misconceptions out of your head. This party had a whole lot, looked a whole lot more like a frat party than it did a deacon's meeting. It did. These folks are tax collectors and sinners and partiers. It was a party. Randy, you're not telling me they had alcohol there. Well, I don't know, folks. Let's put two and two together. They called him, they accused him of being a glutton and a drunkard. Can he be a drunkard if there's not some alcohol around? Okay, now I'm not saying that Jesus was throwing a few back. I'm not saying that. I wasn't there. I don't know. Okay, what I am saying is Jesus was willing to be in an environment with things that he didn't agree with. Jesus was willing to be in an environment where people did things that did not follow according to the law. Why would he do that? Why would he go to places where good religious folk don't go? That's the Pharisees' question. Why on earth would he go somewhere where good religious folks don't belong? And Jesus says, wait a minute. If we're followers of God Almighty, the one who gave us life, the one who is going to give you life forever through my death on the cross, through my resurrection, if you are going to believe in those things, if you're going to believe in that, then this is exactly where you belong. Because that's where people need love and grace. Because God did not come to offer hope to those who have it all together. And by the way, none of us do. Jesus came to offer hope to all who are broken and all who've ever made a mistake. And all of us have. So friends, you know, where you stand on alcohol, that's not the issue here. Okay? What I'm saying is because Jesus was around people who were drinking, he got accused of it. I don't ever want to be accused of something like that. You know what? I'd be more than happy to be accused of being around people who are far from God just so I could love them toward Jesus. I hope someday I get accused of that. Matter of fact, it was kind of funny. I heard a couple of days ago, Alice and I were out at a neighborhood establishment, a place I like to eat and like to write sermons at, which is kind of fun. Place I like to write and eat sermons at, that it has a different clientele at night than they do during the day. Matter of fact, a couple of weeks ago, there was a band playing at this place that we knew a couple of the members of the band, so we went to go and listen to them. And we were all wedged in there, and it was crowded, and it was 10 o'clock on a Friday night, and it turns out one of the kids, a kid of one of our church members was there hanging out, 20-something, one of our church members was there and hanging out, and he later told his mom, hey, did you know your pastor was out there listening to a band? It was my best day ever. I mean, the 20-something thought I was cool for a second. It was really funny. Folks, here's the thing. Here's the thing. If you and I are scared to be where people who don't follow Jesus are, then we're never going to get to invite anybody to Jesus. We can't invite people to Jesus if we don't love them and aren't willing to listen to them and aren't willing to be where they are. Now, that does not mean we do what they do. I get it. We do not do what they do. But we have to be willing to go where they are. Because they're not coming here. This place doesn't feel comfortable to them. Not yet. So we have to be willing to go where people are and love them where they are, whether it's at school, whether it's at CNU, whether it's at a local restaurant, whether it's in your office, wherever it might be, we have to go where people are and listen to them where they are. And as we grow in loving them, we will have the opportunity to invite them toward Jesus in love and in compassion. That's what we're going to be about. We're going to be the kind of church where we don't spend all of our time in these walls. Where we give members and attenders the opportunity to go and befriend folks who are not followers of Jesus. Where we encourage people and give folks the strength and the prayer to be in environments where people may be doing things that you don't approve of. And yet at the same time, loving people where they are. Because that's what Jesus did. Jesus was in places where obviously he didn't approve of the behavior that was happening. And yet he approved of the people. He loved him. And you know what's crazy? You know what's amazing? You read the stories of the New Testament, and folks that the Pharisees called sinners, folks that were doing things that Jesus didn't necessarily approve of, those folks crowded around him by the hundreds. The tax collectors, the sinners, the prostitutes, the drinkers, the drunkards, all of these folks, all through the scriptures, all the people that had been kicked out of the synagogue rallied around Jesus. Did they rally around Jesus because he said, what you're doing's okay? No. They rallied around Jesus because he said, look, there's a different way of living. And if you will follow me, I can show you a life you've never imagined. If you will put down your sin and follow me, I can show you something you've never thought you'd see. And they tried him and they found him true. Friends, I just have a question for us. If we're followers of Jesus, and all sorts of broken people rushed to be around Jesus, why don't they rush to be around us? One of my prayers for my life is that people who are not followers of Jesus will be absolutely comfortable around me. Not because I do what they do, but because inside of me they see Jesus and are drawn to him. May it be so for all of us. Because we're not in the business of building a great organization. We're not in the business of building a great institution with great programs. Understand something clearly, friends. We're in the business of saving lives. We're in the business of anyone out in our world who is broken and hurting and without God. We're in the business of inviting them to come and have their life healed and restored. That is what we are about. We are not about us. We are about those broken, hurting people. You know, it reminds me of a group that I talked about before. You've probably heard me talk about it. But years ago, a group was formed called the United States Life Saving Service. They were formed because there were folks all up and down the Virginia and North Carolina coast, and up in Cape Cod and that area as well, up in the Northeast, that were, because of the dangerous shoals and the situations that we have off the shore, ships wrecked all the time. And people began to become so concerned about this that they formed different groups, and they would, as volunteers, they would put together groups that would have stores at the ready, they would have houses of refuge at the ready, they would have boats at the ready and ropes, and they had folks who would simply watch the sea. Volunteers. Did I mention they were volunteers? Volunteers. Lay people, if you will, who would watch the seas day in and day out, looking for people that were in distress. And when they saw people in distress, they would ring the bell. Folks would come and they would put out into the seas, no matter how bad it was. They would put out into the seas and they would do everything they could to save lives. United States Life Saving Service. They had a motto. You have to go out. You don't have to come back. That's a great joining motto, isn't it? You have to go out. You don't have to come back. The point is very simple. We're going to lay everything out there in the waves to make sure that every life possible gets saved. And we're willing to give up our lives and our comfort. We're willing to give up our preferences to do it. They had these life-saving stations all up and down the coast. Now today, years later, the Coast Guard handles all that stuff. Volunteers used to do it. Now they said, let the professionals handle it. And the Coast Guard handles all that, but you're lucky. You can still visit some of these life-saving stations. They're still there. They had five of them on Virginia Beach. There's one of them that's still there. It's a museum. And you can read it. In that museum, you can see all about life-saving. As a matter of fact, any of you ever heard of the Outer Banks? Anybody ever been there? Anybody vacationed to the Outer Banks? I hear we do that around here. I'm still learning it, the Newport News culture, but I hear that's what we do. Many of you may have been to the Kitty Hawk Life-Saving Station. Anybody been there? The Kitty Hawk Life-Saving Station? Oh, anybody been to the Black Pelican Restaurant? Then you've been to the Kitty Hawk Life-Saving Station. That's it. And you can read, even in that restaurant, you can read and see pictures of folks who saved lives. You can hear the stories of what happened in that building. But you know what you won't do there, even if you eat great food at the Black Pelican? You know what you won't do? You won't save a life. Because that's not what they do there anymore. May it never be said. May it never be said about this building that these people used to save lives and used to do things in their community, but that's just not what they do anymore. We're about something that's more than us. We're on a life-saving mission. Because people matter to God, and if they matter to God and to Jesus so much that He'll sit down and eat with them, then they, by golly, ought to matter to us that much too. People matter to God.